Killer E's, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Let's go straight out to the HRMP guest line, where Basketball Hall of Famer kind enough to grace our presence. Coach, always great to have you on. Thanks for taking a few minutes. The big news in the NBA yesterday in the city of Houston, Christian Wood heading to Dallas for the 26th pick of the NBA draft, some throw-ins to make it work from the cap purposes, expiring contracts as well, so the Rockets not on the hook for any significant money long-term. What are your thoughts of the Rockets moving on from Christian Wood and getting a late first in this year's draft?
Probably better for both teams. I think that Christian Wood needs to go someplace where he's got a defined role. I think with such a young team, he probably tried doing too much. And you know, he's not the future. I mean, those young guys they got, they're getting another one this year. They've got to be able to grow and get better. You know, you're putting Christian in a situation where he can, you know, pick and roll, dive hard to the basket, pop open for some threes. He's not a primary ball handler. You don't have to worry about him turning the ball over and making bad decisions. Doncic is going to have the ball in his hands a lot. So it probably works for Dallas. And every time you get a bunch of young guys that are not secure in their positioning in the league and they want to be the guy and they want this, and you get too many of those guys on the team, and winning becomes so hard because you have so many different agendas. They needed to move on from that. So, you know, overall a good move. I mean, when they got him, I thought he put up pretty good numbers for the Rockets, but on losing teams, and you know, if you're losing, it's just putting up numbers is really meaningless.
Coach, put your general manager's hat on, as I like to have you do from time to time. If you're sitting there in the GM chair and you now have number 3, number 17, and number 26, you're obviously going to stay put at 3. But do you think about packaging the other 2? And maybe even someone off your roster to get something else you either desperately need or think is something that would really help this team at this point with all the young talent?
Yeah, you know, I would think about maybe packaging them up and moving if I could, if there's somebody I really like. But I would also think about, you know, packaging some stuff up and moving later. Start getting some second-round picks that aren't guaranteed contracts. Getting some guys later in the draft, acquiring picks for the future. Take that 17th and move it to a team that's young and wants multiple picks, and get their pick 2 years from now, 3 years from now. Be creative, because the last thing you need is to have 3 first round picks thrown on this team. I just think the number 3 pick, of course, is going to be a hell of a player, but they need to start developing some chemistry and some toughness and some basketball winning ability with what they have, and adding 3 new guys to that is just, oh gosh. I tell you what, poor Silas would just be ripping his hair out.
Coach, that's one of the things I wanted to ask you about, too, was, like, there's going to be young players on this team. I love your idea of trading, you know, one of your late firsts for a future first, especially since the Rockets aren't going to have their own draft picks here in a couple of years. But what's the right balance? Like, look, the Rockets are rebuilding. We know they're a developmental team. You're trying to get the most from Jalen Green. You're trying to get the most with whoever you draft at number 3. There's a heavy burden on the coaches to try to develop those players. But how much veteran presence do you need in the locker room, too? Even a guy who's not playing, just to help groom those young players as well.
Yeah, you need the veteran presence, as long as you understand, as long as you talk to the guy and said, look, you're probably not going to play that much, but this is the role we need you for. And you might have to give the guy an extra year, you know, instead of a 1-year deal, give him a 2-year deal, so the guy comes there understanding he's not going to play late in his career, whatever. But you do need that voice, but you need to have that guy understand what his role is going to be, that he's really going to help you. And you can't have too many young guys on it. I'm just telling you, at some point you're going to start winning. I've seen it a million times. They get talent. The guys get losing habits. They don't win. They're not held accountable for a lot of little things. Sprinting back on defense, making the extra rotations. You know, all the stuff right now, if you watch the finals right now, you know, and the Celtics go bad, it's because they're not making the extra pass. They're not making the early pass. They're not throwing the ball ahead. They're not sprinting the lanes. They're not doing all the little things. If you're not doing those little things, you're not winning big games. And if you have a team full of young guys that aren't doing the little things, you're in trouble. You're better off getting rid of some of the guys and condensing down and saying, who are my best 2? What's my core 2 or 3 of my best young guys? And then trying to teach those guys how to win. Because eventually, you can only keep 2 or 3 of them anyways. You know, with the cap the way it is, with the money situation. So, yeah, I've seen it a million times. You get a team that they've got 10 guys under 24, and oh, it's a three-ring circus.
It's recess. Coach, I got a question for you in regards to your Celtics, and I know how much you would like to see them win tonight. It's puzzling to me with Steph with like a 70-plus percent success rate with the way the Celtics are dropping low into drop coverage on the high pick and roll for him to get his shots. He was 0 for 9 the other night. They still found a way to win, but it doesn't seem like Boston is – they're going to be stubborn. They're not going to do what you and I have said we saw so much with Harden, which is a hard show, almost forced into a double team, get it out of his hands, and then retreat and recover. And it's just mesmerizing to me, as good of a defensive team as Boston is with the athletes that they have, why they haven't tried something differently to try and stop Curry.
No, I agree. I think at some point, especially when he had that 43-point, whatever, that explosion, 46, when he went crazy, at a certain point, he just got double-teamed. We went through that one playoff series when I was coaching. Ended up beating us because of it in Portland. We were playing Aldridge head up, and we kept the lead in the game, but they beat us at home two games late. And my instincts were to trap him, get the ball out of Aldridge's hand, make someone else beat us because he was on fire those first two games. And we kept on saying, "Nah, we're winning," blah blah blah. There's sometimes you got to go with your gut instinct. So I know what Udoka is going through. At a certain point, I do believe you got to get the ball out of a guy who's that hot hand. And I went through it, in Houston where I didn't, and it actually I think cost us that series. That was a series that Lillard made that great shot in Game Six to knock us out. But that series was really lost, kind of allowing Aldridge way too much freedom. Even though we had a 7 and 8 point lead in the game, it didn't feel good to me. He just had too much of a rhythm going. So I can see where you go as a coach, but I think Coach Udoka, he's got to just say, look, at some point we got to get up on him, press up on him, take the ball out of his hands, make somebody else beat us. So I agree with you. I just, the drop coverage, get up, tighten it up. And then, of course, you're going to really close out tight to Clay and Poole and some of their shooters. But they're going to have to make some non-shooters handle the ball and make some plays for them.
Basketball Hall of Famer, former coach of the Rockets, Kevin McHale. We asked each other this question and asked it to the Hive as well the other day, Coach, after Game 5 when the Warriors took their first lead of the series, 3-2. How alive the Celtics still are? Obviously, Game 6 tonight in Boston, if they can force a Game 7. What do you think? How alive are the Celtics despite being down 3-2 in these finals?
You know what? They have a chance because they've been resilient all year. Like when they lost the game, had to win 6 and 7, game 6 and 7 against Milwaukee, I was like, oh boy, this ought to be interesting, And they did it though. Those guys were right now. I just looking at the eyes of the Celtics and looking at Jason Tatum sitting at the press conference, and they're questioning some things. Like, he's not playing well, and he's questioning some stuff. I didn't see that same questioning when they were playing Milwaukee. It just seemed like those guys had it going. And I tell you what, if you're top players don't have it going, it is really hard to expect that all your role players and all the other players are going to fill in and play great. Happens once in a while, but I don't know. I'm really concerned that for the first time, they kind of feel defeated. Like, we just don't have any answers. And, Wiggins is doing a hell of a job on Tatum. Tatum hasn't been effective offensively. Brown starts off hot, and he just kind of just melds into it and turnovers. And right now, I think the Celtics are questioning themselves a little bit. And we'll see. We'll see tonight. You can see that questioning. If all of a sudden Golden State makes a big run on them, and they let go, and you're like, oh, boy. So I didn't feel they were going to let go against Milwaukee. I thought they were going to keep on battling. I hope they keep battling against Golden State. But, we're going to see. It's going to be interesting.
So we appreciate you even more than ever because you're up north. There's been some bad storms. You're trying to sort through some things. But I know that somehow, some way, no matter what the power situation is, the U.S. Open's on. Who's your pick this week?
Ooh. I played that course multiple times. Those greens are about the size of your car. God, they're small. It just, I don't hit greens anyway. I could never hit a green out there. Brookline was a sister club to Charles River Clubs. Well, that's where I played at. So I played the Country Club a lot of times. I'd love to see Rory McIlroy win. I don't know. I just kind of you know what, he played so well for so long, and then kind of gotten to a point where it looked like he was so far into his head that he was thinking about everything. Mm-hmm. And now he's free again. So I'd love to see him win U.S. Open. I don't know if it's set up for him, but we'll see.
Plus, he's got a middle finger save for the shark, and that's giving him extra motivation.
Yeah, the shark. Let me see. Not just the shark. Mickelson, the shark.
There's a list. There's a laundry list.
First round 67 for Rory. Tied for the lead in the clubhouse.
All right. Well, hey, like I say, it's a tough track. It's got big rough and small greens. Not something that Kevin McHale does well on.
Well, you do well with our segment, Coach. And we always appreciate it. We'll catch up again soon.
Okay, guys. Good talking to you.
It's Kevin McHale, former head coach of the Rockets, basketball Hall of Famer.